Welcome back to the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. In this episode, I speak with Inner Circle co-coach Susan Niebergall about a lot. We speak about what it's like to be a personal trainer. We talk about how to get motivated if you are not currently motivated. We talk about Susan and sort of her journey into fitness, where she started, where she's ended up, how she's went from 4 years ago not being able to do any chin-ups to now being able to do chin-ups with 25 pounds wrapped around her waist. So we have a great talk. Hope you enjoy the episode. If you do, please leave a 5-star review on iTunes. And do not forget, you can join the Inner Circle at www.sfinnercircle.com. What's up, Susan Niebergall?
What's up, Jordan Syatt?
I stepped in poop about 10 minutes ago.
Yikes, where was that?
Right outside my apartment. Rico and I went on a walk before the podcast. Uh-huh. And it was very disheartening because we had walked by a dog poop about 30 minutes earlier. And I was like very proud of myself that I spotted it and I protected Rico from it. I was like, oh, no, dog poop, don't step in it. And then on the way back, literally maybe like 100 yards or 100 feet away from the entrance to the apartment, just like slipped right on some shit. And I didn't fall.
You slipped?
I didn't fall. I slipped. I did slip, but there was no fall. Yeah, I slipped on it. And then it was actually really lucky because literally feet away from that, someone had been spraying water on the sidewalk. So there was like a lot of water that I could wash my shoe off in. But then when I went to go look at my shoe at the bottom of it, my hand scraped along like a little last remnant of poop. So I got someone else's dog poop on my shoe and hand, and then I had to wash it when I got in the apartment. And my girlfriend was mad that I walked in the apartment with poopy shoe on. So
I'll tell you, you know, dog poop can get wedged up on in there in your shoes.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And actually, so I was actually just asking my girlfriend if I'd ever told her this story. Did I tell you the story about the time when I stepped in poop when I lived in Boston? I don't know if I ever told you this story. So I like co-owned a gym in Boston before I ended up moving to Israel before I started working with Gary. So this is like 5 years ago or something. So the gym in Boston, it was in the financial district, and you know, there are a lot of homeless people in that area. And every night, especially in the winter, someone would sleep in the doorway because it was like they had a heated doorway and it was cold. It got them out of the cold and out of the wind. And one morning, it was like 5 a.m, going into the gym, and it was super dark outside in a very unlit area. So I'm walking, I go in, I open the door, I go into the gym, I'm walking around, and I'm like, oh, it smells like poop. And I was like, what is going on? And I'm trying to figure out where the poop is in the gym. So I'm walking all over the gym trying to find the source of the poop. And then I turn the lights on and I see that I tracked poop all over the gym, all over the turf, everywhere. And I think the worst part about it was that it was human poop. Like, it was not dog, that was human poop. And I was wearing Timberland boots, and they're like, they have a lot of ridges all along the bottom. Oh yeah.
It's all up in there.
I had to go in the bathroom and clean the shoes out and then go all over. And this then like had to rush to clean up the human fecal matter all over the floor before the client started coming in. So,
well, then after that, it like you that's all you smell for like days.
Oh yeah. I mean, absolutely.
That's all you can sense. You did tell me that as soon as you then you walked in, you tracked it. I remember that. Yes.
Yeah. So that's where I'm at right now. How are you? What's going on with you?
Well, I didn't step in any poop today, so I guess that's a win.
That's a huge win.
That's a huge win. I'll take that. Yeah, it's just hot and humid today. Really humid. Like,
yeah.
I went out for a walk. I've been going out for a walk every morning at like 6:30. For like,
you told me that. That's amazing.
I'm still doing it. And it's one of those things. Every time the alarm goes off, I'm like, ugh.
Like, you don't want to do it.
I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I'm trying to think of reasons why I shouldn't do it. And I just get up and I do it anyway. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's not been easy. But I went out this morning and I came back. I mean, I have a lot of hair anyway, but I came back. I didn't have my hair tied back or anything. So I just grabbed my stuff and I just like get it over with. And I came back and my hair is like out to, you know, my hair is like frizzy. Ginormous. Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah, it was bad.
How long is your walk in the morning?
Distance wise, I don't know. I've never really, it's about 3,000, 4,000.
No, like how many minutes do you walk for?
What is it? I don't know, 20 ish, maybe 30 at the most.
Got it. Okay. So you get up 6:30.
I have a little route that I go see the same old people on the same route every day. It seems like,
when did you start
this? 2 weeks ago.
You never want to do it before you do it, but after you do it, you're always happy you did?
Always. And, you know, I do that when I come to New York. Every time I come to New York, every single time, I get up even earlier, actually, at like 6, 5:30 sometimes, and will be out. But there I have a little bit more of a purpose, because I'll go get coffee on my walk. I got a podcast in, so I'm just kind of waking up. I mean, I feel like that's a little different, and the city's different than just walking in this neighborhood or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a little interesting, but I just feel better when I do that.
The city is nice to walk around, and I guess like they're both nice in their own way. I like walking around in the city during normal times, not during quarantine times, when it's actually really interesting. Walking around in the city right now during quarantine times is similar to what that's like when you're here during normal times. Like walking around in New York City when it's quiet is very rare. Like it's not usual to see it quiet. So it's nice. Like when you and I are out, and Rico and I, and we're all out filming for the Inner Circle, and we see it's crazy busy, like 10 PM after a day of filming, whatever it is. Then in the next morning at like 5 or 6 in the morning, it's just quiet. It's a really nice juxtaposition with New York to see that.
I love it. That's why I love getting up, to be part of the quiet, but it's always quiet here. So
I've been thinking about that though. Like, I'm very much getting to a point where I'm ready to leave New York. And, you know, I've loved it. I've been here for, I don't know, four years or so. And thinking more about having more land and having more space and being able
to be careful what you ask for with more land. Just saying.
Why? Just saying. What do you mean?
The bills are never ending. There's always something that's either broken, or needs to be fixed, needs to be mowed, needs to be torn down, needs to be rebuilt. It never stops.
Oh yeah, you're always redoing stuff, right?
Oh my God, yeah. It because it never stops. But we have a huge yard, very private. We border. It's not just a square. I mean, we have a really cool angle to it too. We have a pool, so I mean, I have a lot of nice. I mean, it's a nice place. But the upkeep is
a lot. It's no joke. Yeah, yeah.
It's no joke. I don't mow that lawn. I pay somebody to mow that lawn.
How big is your lawn?
Third of an acre, maybe.
Got it.
I mean,
the lawn itself.
I mean, our whole property, and that's pretty substantial here.
Yeah.
We have one of the bigger lots. We're on a cul-de-sac of a dead end. So really, there's no traffic except people that live here. You know. So from that perspective, it's really, really nice.
Got it. So you've been doing your walks every morning. What podcast are you listening to?
Crime Junkies.
Really?
It's called Crime Junkies. Yeah.
What is it? What do they talk about?
They talk about crimes that either haven't been solved or just got solved, just famous crimes in history too, and ones that you've never heard of. And they just, these two girls that do it, and they research it, and they basically tell the story of what happened and how it all played out. And it's fascinating to me.
Like music along with it, or is it more just like they just tell the story and they're good storytellers?
They tell the story. I got hooked. There was one podcast called Serial, Serial, and she tells a whole story, an elaborate story of cases. She takes 12 to 15 episodes to take you through the whole story of one crime. And one was a really big trial of a military guy, Bo Bergdahl or somebody, Bergdahl, who was getting court-martialed or something. He supposedly went over to the Taliban voluntarily. And it's the whole story of him and what happened. And I mean, it was just like binge listen. You know, I couldn't wait to get out to turn it on again to see what was coming next. But I like doing this because it has nothing to do with fitness. I actually like listening to you and Mike a lot while I'm walking too. I think that's very calming for me. Mm-hmm. But I don't like to listen to a lot of fitnessy stuff then.
You spend all day doing it. It's like, I very much get it. That's one of the things that when a lot of people tell me they want to be a personal trainer or a coach, I'm always like, well, let's talk about this for a second, because it's as I'm sure you'll agree, one of the most rewarding jobs in the world. And mm-hmm. I love it. And I know you love it too. I think a lot of people, because the fitness industry as coaches, they have, it's one of the highest burnout rates out of any industry. You like most coaches don't make it past their first year. I think it's like over 90% stop within the first year. And I think one of the major reasons for that is because people often think they want to become a coach because they love working out, not because they love coaching. And it's mm-hmm. such a small distinction, but it's such an important distinction.
Significant though.
Huge.
Because you could be great in a gym, but be a lousy teacher. I mean, it's like that with music people all the time. You've got the best musician maybe in the world, but they might be a shitty teacher. You know? I mean, they may not be able to teach somebody how to play the instrument worth of beans, but they can play it. You know, I think it's not one and the same. You have to have both skills, I think.
Absolutely. Not to mention when you love working out, and this is usually someone wants to become a fitness coach, at least in part because they love working out. It's one thing to be the person who loves working out, but when you coach people, you're going to be coaching people who don't love working out. And yeah. I think as someone who loves working out, this is definitely one of the things I struggled with early on in my career. It's one of the reasons I think I'm lucky that I started coaching when very young, is because I realized very early on, most of the people you coach will not love it. Like they will not mm-hmm. be obsessed with it. They will not be super excited to go. And I think a lot of coaches burn out because they realize part of the process of coaching isn't just giving someone a program. Like that's the easy part.
Right.
The hard part is like, how do you actually motivate someone? How do you get them to not only go there, but then how to be consistent with it? So like, let's talk about that a little bit. How do you help people who don't want to work out? Like, how do you help them do that? How do you get them to that point?
You know, that's tough because I think it's very individual for each person, but I think I like to get a read on them and just find out other things that they like to do. Try to get an idea of that first, but set them up with small little things that they can do to feel like they've accomplished something, that they are moving forward, that they're checking off their list, they're feeling good about themselves for whatever the small thing is. Maybe it's walking. I mean, we're talking about walking. It could be walking. You know, give them a goal of 5 or 10 minutes of walking every day mm-hmm. or something. That's doable for just about anybody. Mm-hmm. You can walk in your house. You can walk in your yard. Whatever. Just move. Something like that. Because I think it's what you and I talk about all the time. Once they start getting on a roll with something, mm-hmm. well, then maybe they start feeling better. They start moving better. They see a little result here and there, blah, blah, blah. Now maybe we're ready to go to something else. You know, the 10-minute walk increases to 15, 20. They put on a podcast and start listening for 30 or something. I think it has to start with that.
Have you noticed a difference in motivation with people who you trained in person versus people who you trained online?
You know, that's an interesting question. I remember people that I had training in person, I saw them for the however long the time block was. I did sessions from 30 minutes to 60. It depended on who I was working for. But I didn't have any contact with them in between. None. Mm-hmm. You know, they just showed up. And some of them, all they wanted was their ass kicked. That was kind of it. They weren't like, I want to lose 10 pounds. You know, I think they kind of wanted to along the way, but they didn't certainly want to even talk about that. They just wanted to feel sweaty and sore and, you know, whatever. But I found it harder to motivate the in-person people because you only see them once a week or twice a week or whatever it is. With online, we get to communicate with people often. And I tell people that when they inquire about coaching is that that's one of the benefits of online coaching. You might not think of that logically, but it really is something that we do. We're in contact with people. And, you know, the internet, everything helps with all of that, obviously, but we're in contact with people all the time, like 24/7 sometimes, you know, and I think that helps.
Absolutely. It's one of the things that I vividly remember when online coaching became a thing. I remember before Instagram existed. I remember it was in about 2011. 2012 when I first made my website and people started to do online coaching. I remember the kickback from the science-based fitness community was outrageous. And talk about like cancel culture. I saw a lot of that coming out back then with science-based coaches being like, if you see someone coaching people online, like they don't know what they're talking about. Like, how dare you even think that someone could possibly get results and that you could possibly give someone a high quality service online? And it was actually like a very scary thing to see that people were tearing people down like this, just indiscriminately being like, you can't do this when they've never even tried it. And, you know, you see the same exact things happening now in different areas of life. But I vividly remember thinking, well, that must be true. Like, how could you possibly train someone online? Like, how could you do that? It doesn't make any sense. And I was scared to do it because so many people were saying it was bad and wrong and it wasn't going to work. But now, after doing it, after coaching people for years in person and years online, now they both have their pros and cons. Obviously, coaching in person, you're going to be able to help people with their technique probably better. You can put their hands on them. You can put them in the right position. You can watch every rep while they're doing it. But I think the point that you mentioned, that if we're sort of going to circle to motivation, the accountability aspect of online is unbeatable.
Unbeatable.
If we're talking about the number one thing we always talk about, which is consistency, nothing beats the forced accountability of checking in with someone on a daily basis, telling them what you're doing, what you did, having someone there to know that you're there from. And what you hit on earlier, you were like, you would see someone in person maybe at the absolute most 3 hours a week. Absolutely much. Three times a week for three hours in total, and that's it. And that's not a lot at all. Mm-mm. Whereas online, you have the opportunity to speak with someone every single day, sometimes multiple times a day. You know that you send them an email, they're going to check in, they're going to see your food logs, you're going to see your training program, all this stuff. It's so interesting to me how having an accountability online, whether it's one-on-one or in a group, I've noticed has helped with motivation so much for people as opposed to in-person coaching.
Oh, 1,000%, especially like in the inner circle and the amount of support and accountability and motivation that's within that group just for each other.
Oh my God. Yeah. Seeing people, for example, like Amy will put up her daily gratitude check-in post every single day, or there are a number, even like Joe will put up the weekly Monday post, like, what are you going to do this week? What'd you struggle with last week? How are you going to do better this week? It's like, whether inner circle or another group, or even your own group of friends that you have something online, I think having some form of online accountability is one of the single best ways, especially if you struggle with motivation. And this is just one of the most common questions that we get literally every day, multiple times a day. How do you get motivated? How do you get motivated? How do you get motivated? And our usual response, which just sort of based on science, is understanding you have to first take action. You have to do something. Well, I think usually we think about action in the terms of going on a walk, start like have a salad every day, whatever it is. But what if your action is forming a group or joining a group or getting a group of your friends together or making a statement online that you're going to be consistent with posting whatever it is you're doing? It's like finding a way to be accountable and using technology is, I think, one of the best ways to do that.
That's phenomenal action. I mean, that's phenomenal action. And I think people I talked to somebody just the other day about, I keep getting asked, what turned it around for me? Like, how did I change things when I was so late in life in my 50s? And I really thought about it. And I just thought, you know, a lot of it was surrounding myself with people that would hold me accountable, like you. I mean, but that's what part of it is. It is. Mm-hmm. You have to, it is the support and the accountability. I look back on that and I think before that, I never really had that. I had lots of trainers along the way and, you know, they all taught me stuff along the way, but there was never the accountability. There was never the support. I mean, that was the biggest difference, you know? And I think it's something that's super important to make sure everyone understands that feeling supported and feeling like you have some sort of accountability in whatever manner you want to get that is, I think, really, really important to drive you towards a goal. I mean,
what was the hardest part for you when you first started to really get into fitness? Like, what was the most challenging thing for you?
I think it was the frustration. I mean, and this is going way, 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 way back. It was the frustration of that I was killing it in the gym. I was getting stronger. I loved it, all that kind of stuff. But I was not looking like I wanted to look. I didn't have the other half of the equation going. I had the one part of the equation going, which is where most people have the equation going, is in the gym or your fitness, or you're doing whatever activity you like and you're really doing really well with that. But I was almost ignoring the other part, you know, the one that really counts. Yeah. Yeah. The part that really counts. Yeah. So that, I think it was the frustration of that.
Was there ever a time that you didn't like working out?
No.
You, okay. So you were always like, you liked working out.
Yeah.
But and, nutrition, you know, was the hard part.
That started though with classes, the community piece. You know, some gyms do that really well. Like you want to go to that class because it's that instructor and it's that crew of people and it's the community. There's a support group there that you don't really even think about at the time, but that's what drove me back. That's what started, you know?
Do you remember what your first class was?
I remember, you know, no, I can't say for sure, but when I was writing in my book, I had to write about, I did a stint in jazzercise.
That's awesome.
That's like so old school. I remember being in a church. You know, they held those in churches, in like the rec room. Very vague recollection of it, but recall that I hated it, but I did it just because I thought I had to kind of do it. I don't know if I would say that. I don't know if I can say that for sure. I did a short stint of it. It was not my thing.
Is that like Richard Simmons style?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, kind of that kind of thing.
Did you ever like do Richard Simmons videos?
I didn't do his videos, but I've watched him. He's a hoot.
Oh yeah, he's so funny. Oh my God, he's like the original online trainer before online was a thing. Like he made videos and VHS, I think it was, where it's like, all right, you're going to do this workout at home without someone here. It's like, what a genius. What an absolute genius and a tremendous businessman. I mean, I don't think his exercises are the greatest, but at least he got people moving. At least he got people moving. He had fun, got them to enjoy it, got them excited about it. I mean, what a tremendous individual and an entrepreneur and coach to get so many people motivated and excited. And I think this brings up such a great point. This is one of the reasons why I'll never say don't try the keto diet, or I'll never say don't do jazzercise, or don't do, because you never know what someone is going to end up doing because they first started with whatever, right? It's like if you first started with these rec room classes that you didn't like, but they got you involved in working out, which got you involved to doing other classes or going to the gym, which got you involved with getting more coaches, which it goes down this line of progression and progression. And now look at you, now like you're a leading fitness professional and like you look unbelievable. You're super strong. You're doing chin-ups with what, like 40 pounds around your waist? Like it's insane.
No, not yet. No.
with at least 25 pounds around your
25,
waist.
25.
You're doing chin-ups with 25 pounds around your waist when not, what, 5 years ago you couldn't do any?
Not even. No, four. 4 years ago, I couldn't
4 years ago, you couldn't do any chin-ups. Now you're doing chin-ups with 25 pounds wrapped around your waist, and it started with you doing rec room jazzercise classes at your local church. I love that. That's amazing.
That's crazy. Yeah, but I mean, it is a community. But jazzercise wasn't the community, but you know, if I really piece that together, that probably made me more comfortable to go to the gym and do a class, which was then, those classes were like aerobics classes, you know, lots of jumping and steps and, you know, I mean, it was just craziness, high intense energy for, you know, 45 minutes or something. But yeah, the community aspect, the support aspect, I think everyone needs that in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Yeah. I very much agree. It's so funny. When I was in high school, I was obsessed with working out, like obsessed with fitness, mainly because of wrestling. When I went to college, I was very resistant to having training partners. I didn't like the idea because in my mind, in my very, very egotistical mind, I was like, no one's going to work as hard as me, all this other stuff. I was like, I don't want to work out with anybody. I just want to do it myself. And I was very standoffish to the idea of having training partners. I eventually ended up finding, and actually this is interesting. So my first 3 months of college were some of the worst months of my entire life. I was super sad, very depressed. I was not in a good place. And I was very resistant to having any training partners. I eventually met two guys, Nick Busan and Joe Ritenny, in the gym. And we met because we were all wearing Chuck Taylors, which meant that we were all powerlifters, right? So like we all saw that each other were wearing Chuck Taylors, and we all saw that we were all deadlifting. And so we're like, all right, wow, like clearly like these guys at least are doing something right. So we all started to talk while we were deadlifting, and we eventually decided to create a powerlifting team. And we, the three of us, invented and co-founded the University of Delaware powerlifting team, which is one of the biggest in the country to this day. And with those three guys, and then quickly we grew to like five, and then we got a bunch of girls involved, and it was amazing. I quickly realized within the first 6 months of college that I never trained better than when I had great training partners. I had great people to train with. And it was interesting because when I was the most sad and the most alone, I was the most resistant to having any interaction or getting people involved. But when I opened up to allowing more people in and having more accountability and having training partners, that's when I became happier. I enjoyed training more. I became the strongest I've ever been. I think it's a good idea to recognize that in yourself if you're very resistant to the idea of joining a community or meeting new people. It might literally be the best thing you could possibly do.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. Our gyms here can open on Friday. That's the word. Yeah. I haven't heard from mine yet. I have a lot of their equipment. So if they want to open on Friday, they better tell me. But I miss the midday crowd. I don't know their names. I don't know any of their names, to be honest with you. They don't know mine either. But we were always there at the same time. We would talk. I would spot for them. They would spot for me. Or, you know, that was a little sense that we were kind of training buddies in that way. We didn't like work together. But even that, the sense of community I have missed dramatically in these last 3 months. Isn't it weird that gyms could open here on Friday and I'll go. I mean, if mine opens on Friday, I will be there, but it's going to feel weird to me.
Which I hate. I'm very interested to see what will happen in the immediate future, what's going to happen to the gym culture. Because during this time, I know many people have invested in gym equipment and have it in their homes now. And a lot of people are like, yeah, they're like, I'm not going to go back to the gym. I don't know if that's accurate. I mean, in the immediate future, yes. I foresee people, if you bought a lot of gym equipment, staying at home, sure, why not? I just think that as someone who's spent a considerable amount of time training at home and training people who train at home, there's something different about having a place outside of your home to go work out at that is very beneficial mentally and emotionally. It's the same reason why when I am at home, I have a place in my home where I work, and I prefer not to work in my home. I prefer not to be answering emails at home. I prefer not to be doing stuff at home, because when you're there all the time and you start to associate work with being at home and everything else, you have nowhere to go that's your own, that's your like a place away. So I foresee that I think in the immediate future, there's going to be a fair amount of people who don't go back to the gym. But I would say within the first year to 2 years, gyms will be right back up to where they were before.
I totally agree. I don't think it'll be right away, though. I don't think so. Like, I can see myself going. I'll go. But I can also see myself, if I have a busy day, I may not go that day and do my workout here because I know I can.
Exactly.
You know? But I think I will lean towards going because of what you just said. Home is supposed to be home. And for me, these past 3 months, it has turned into, I don't know what it's turned into. I mean, there's people here everywhere. I'm working out. I mean, I'm sitting in my workout space because this is the space where I can get away from people walking through the kitchen or doing whatever. You know, it's.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully once we get all this construction done or whatever, we're going to settle on where Mike's going to go. Then I will have a room. He just gets to pick which one I have, and that will be a work room. But I don't even like that as much. I would rather have someplace out that I can work and then home be home. Because for me, it's hard for me to unwind here anymore. I'm always on.
Yeah.
I'm always on. And I am really aware of that. And that is a big issue right now. I really struggle to not do work because I'm always in this environment.
Which is super stressful.
Like yeah.
When you're always on, it's, I don't even think it's necessarily a conscious thing, but like when you're always on, you just always feel obligated to be doing work. You're just constantly stressed out. And you're like, can never take a breather. It's, I've always, ever since college, I've always loved working at coffee shops. Like I really, really enjoy going to a coffee shop, putting some headphones in, listening to some music and just sort of zoning out. It's almost, it's very calming where in the background, there's a lot going on, but you're not listening to it. You don't hear the background.
Yeah.
You just have your headphones in, listening to whatever you want and focusing on your phone or your computer, whatever it is. And then being able to come back to your home and just relax. And home is the place where you can relax. Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And that's a project. And that, I mean, it's going to continue to be a project until we are at the place where we can go. Although Friday is also, restaurants can open at 50% capacity too. So
I can't wait for that.
Inside seating too. We're already in the outside seating
world. Oh, nice.
Yeah, that was phase one. So phase two is inside seating at 50. I don't know what the percentage is. I think it's 50. 50% capacity.
Where's the first restaurant you're going to go to?
I don't know. You know, we've been doing takeout to support all, you know, because we live in kind of a small town.
Yeah,
and so we've been doing takeout. So, like, I don't want to go to any of those places because, I mean, we – I don't know. I honestly don't know.
What's your go-to takeout meal?
Gosh, it depends. I have a go-to at every single place that we order from.
So what's like, – yeah, let's hear some of your –
there's a grilled chicken salad at one place.
Okay.
What's that? There's a grilled chicken salad. Grilled chicken salad at one place. There is an omelet at another – they call it a California omelet at another place. There's – where else do we get takeout from? There was a burger at another place, a build your own burger. That's a regular.
Nice. What do you get on your burger?
I'm kind of easy to please. Lettuce, tomato, anything hot sauce, stuff like that.
You get bacon on your burger? You're a bacon person or not so much?
Not always.
Okay.
Not always. It's Mike. He'll get bacon. He'll get cheese. He'll get an egg. He'll get whatever. You know, you put it, he'll do whatever.
And he's lost a ton of weight over the last year or so, right?
I'm telling him, dude, you know, and I see him at one takeout place. He got himself a pizza. It's not like a normal, like whatever, 16-inch pizza, but it's not a little pan pizza. It's whatever the size is in the middle.
Like 12, 14-inch.
Dude is still eating.
I love that. Eating. He's done it in a very sustainable way. I love that.
But he is really, so really interesting. He's really focus on protein intake right now and trying to improve that, which has been significant.
Okay. Has his protein been low?
I think so. I think it has been. Yeah. So he's focused on that. He really wants to build. So he's working hard at doing that. He's working down here 3 times a week religiously.
That's awesome. That's actually a good topic, I think, to bring up. It's one of the more common questions that I get. I'm sure you do too, in regard to, I get a lot of people who get worried because they're like, I'm in a calorie deficit, but I'm not eating as much protein as you recommend. Is that bad? And what would you say to someone who said that?
You know, unless you're eating 20 grams a day, I'd say, no, it's probably not bad. I remember I had this conversation just shortly with somebody via Instagram. She was concerned about not hitting 1 gram per pound of her goal weight. And I tried to explain to her that you don't need to eat that much, but the math for that is so simple that anybody can do that math. So
correct.
It's an easy way to figure it. And for a non-math person, I love that.
Yeah.
You know, don't give me point this and I'll do the amount. I don't want to do all that. I can do 150 times one. I know how to do that. And I think that makes it simple for people to understand. And I think they appreciate that. So that's why I always use the word aim instead of this is your goal. Aim for it. And, you know, just so it becomes a focus. Because I think that the problem is that they haven't focused on protein before or as much. And now you tell them, okay, try focusing on getting 30 grams every time you eat, or start with something like that. So they can start figuring out, okay, how much chicken am I, if I'm having chicken, or how am I going to do an eggs and egg whites and, you know, whatever, that kind of thing. They figure it out. But yeah, I think people freak out over that a lot.
People get very worried. People get very worried. And I think it makes sense because there's such a huge emphasis on it in the industry. Get your protein, get your protein. But when people are worried about it, I think there's a couple important things for people to remember. Is number one is, if your goal is fat loss, the single most important thing is your calorie intake. Mm-hmm. Like, as long as your calories are good, you're starting from the right place. That's number one. Even if you're not getting enough protein, but you are in a calorie deficit, you're still going to lose fat. That's the most important thing for you to understand. From there, and this is interesting because I found most of the people who worry about not getting enough protein are usually beginners, right? They're just starting out. And this is an important distinction to make, because if you're a beginner and you're strength training, even if you're not getting enough protein, you can still build muscle. And this is very, very important, because if you're a beginner, you're going to get what's called like those newbie gains, right? Mm-hmm. So even if you're not getting as much protein as would be quote unquote optimal, because you're just starting out and your body's going to be adapting, you can still build strength and muscle even if you're not getting enough protein, which is why I think we're so huge on really emphasizing calories are number one. Because
yeah,
that's the hardest thing to learn. It takes the most amount of time to research how many calories are in all these different foods to really understand it. Just focus on calories first. After you get more advanced and you spend more time, you will learn how to incorporate more protein in your diet just through the effort of learning and trial and error. But don't worry about not getting in, quote unquote, enough protein. Number one, like you said, because that 1 gram per pound of goal body weight is more than you need. So you don't need to get that much yet. You don't need to get that much ever. It's a very easy one to do the math on, which makes that part much easier. But even if you're not getting that amount, you don't need that, and you'll learn how to increase your protein intake over time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It just makes it easier to think about. And just the fact that you're thinking about it, well, you'll improve. You know, just by actually now, it's the priority. Like I tell people, build your meals around it. Pick that first. Like whatever your meal is, pick your protein first. And then build your meal around your chicken or your cottage cheese or your yogurt or whatever it is. And that's how you learn.
It's funny. I've gotten a few messages recently from people being like, I'm trying to have like 30 grams of protein every meal, but there's just no way I can do that. That's way too much protein. I'm like, if someone is saying that, then they have definitely not ever weighed or measured how much they're eating. Because it is a truly shockingly small amount of chicken or fish or turkey. 30 grams of protein is not much at all. And usually think you can't get that much, you definitely have not weighed or measured out your food ever. You're probably eating significantly more than that, because your portion sizes are likely way bigger than you think.
Yeah, I think people they haven't weighed because they don't know the visual. They have no idea. Most people, when they say, well, I think I'm getting like 50 grams a day, and they describe kind of what they're eating. No, you're probably getting a lot more than that.
Yeah.
They just, like you said, they have no concept of portion size. And so, or this is 4 ounces of chicken. How many protein grams are in, 4 ounces of raw chicken or something? They don't know. And it's just a matter of doing the research and looking that up and using Google as your friend and learning that way. That's how we all learned.
It's so funny. People are like, well, how do you know? How do you find out how much protein is something? It's like, go to www.google.com and you write in. You don't even have to type in www.google.com. You can just go to the search bar and you open up the internet and you just type it into the internet browser and you say, how much protein is in 3 ounces of chicken, or how much protein is in half a cup of Greek yogurt. And then usually the next question is, but how do you know if it's the right one? Because there are a lot of different options. I'm like, relax.
Yeah.
You're not like, it's impossible to know exactly how much is in exactly. You take your best guess. It's funny. It's like, I guarantee you, if you go up to any barbell in your gym, which is supposed to be 45 pounds, if you measure every barbell in your gym, they're all going to weigh something different. One will be 48 pounds. One will be 32, not 32. One will be like 39 pounds. One will be 41 pounds. They're all going to be off. But just because they're slightly off doesn't mean that you're not going to get stronger or that you're not like still going to improve. Just pick a bar, throw the weight, and use it. Use good
technique.
Be consistent. That's it. Same thing with your calories. You're never going to know exactly how much you're eating, but it doesn't matter because you're taking your best guess and being consistent, and that's it.
Because that's what matters in the long run, is just because that's where everyone goes wrong, to be honest with you. The counting, the calories and stuff are usually pretty good. It's just being consistent with it is where people tend to fall off the boat. But yeah, the whole tracking and using Google and doing all that. I mean, it's the work you put in. That's how you learn.
That's it. The consistency thing. I've gotten so many messages from people during my mini cut, from people being like, oh my God, if I saw that spike happen, I would have quit. Like, oh my God, you're exactly right. This is when I would quit. It's so funny because I don't think people realize how inconsistent they actually are, or maybe they do realize it, but they still get frustrated. That's what pisses me off the most. That's like the number one thing that I get so angry when someone knows they're not being consistent. They know they're not doing the right thing. And they're like, I'm just so frustrated. I'm like, I'm going to have a conniption right now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to lose my mind. You're telling me you're frustrated even though you know you're not doing it. I just don't know what to tell you at this point.
Yeah. I want to pull my hair out. It's, yeah, I'm frustrated too at you, you know, at them. I mean, you think you're frustrated. What about me? It's almost like somebody wants us to just go, poof, here's the magic dust. Let me just put it all over you. Boom, you're good to go now. It's some aversion to putting in effort for this. Like, I just want to be able to eat healthy and blah, blah, blah. And great. I mean, if that's what you want to do, great. But you can't expect certain things to happen if you're not willing to do all the things to make that happen. I mean,
I think the funny one is when people, well, I want to be a flexible dieter. I want to enjoy my favorite foods and I want to do this. It's like, that's great. You can absolutely do that. But enjoying all of your like cakes and pies and treats and ice creams and donuts and pizzas and blah, blah, blah. It's like, that's a very small percentage of your overall diet. I think this is where I think social media can be misleading, where a lot of the people who are super ripped and shredded and da da da, they're posting all their meals and it's like, they're really not posting all their meals. They're posting a very few select meals that like look outrageous. Not to mention, and I think this is a very under-discussed, once you achieve a very lean physique and you have built a lot of muscle mass on top of it, you can indulge more and always find a way to, it's sort of like with a bank account, right? You have a bank, you have $0 in your bank account. If you have $0 in your bank account, then you can't go out and spend a lot of money because you have $0 in your bank account. If when you first start a bank account, you have $0 in it, you have to save and save and save. You're not going on vacations. You're not buying a lot of gifts. You're not getting a fancy house. You're taking in the money and you're saving it and you're saving it, and you're saving it. Then once you have $10 million in your bank account, which I would love that. Yeah, $10 million in your bank account. Now, all of a sudden, you can spend a lot of money on something and not have it do as much quote unquote damage. Number one, because you have a lot already saved up. Number two is not only do you have a lot saved up, you have built systems to get more money back in there, even when you aren't necessarily trying. You have more passive income, you have more systems just to generate more income, you have more invested in different stocks, blah, blah, blah. Same thing with a lean physique. It's like once you get there, you have more opportunities to quote unquote take money out of your bank where you can spend it on other foods. You can enjoy yourself a little bit more because you've gotten a lean physique, you've gotten a low body fat, and you've built muscle on top of it. This takes a long time. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen overnight. So even if the people are posting their real meals on social media, you're not where they are yet. And so you're going to have some sacrifice in order to get there if that's what you want. Keep in mind, I'm not shredded at all. Like, that's not where I want to be. I would much rather be able to have pizza 3 or 4 nights a week and maintain my current body fat percentage. But I'm also not going to say I'm just so frustrated that I'm not there yet. It's because I'm not willing to put in that effort right now.
I think the honesty is what needs to happen. And yeah. It's so interesting you say that, because I have, boy, I, since I went through that 6 month period of putting on weight and building some muscle, and as terrifying as that was, I'm kind of on the other side of it going, because people ask me, when are you going to go into a cut? I'm like, I ain't going into a cut. Why would I go into a cut?
Screw that.
Screw that. I am fascinatingly happy with where I am right now.
That's amazing.
Not every day. I mean, I still have those little, I'm not used to this yet. But it's not enough to make me go, oh my God, and panic, and I have to now reduce. It's really interesting. You just have to be honest about that. And I'm carrying more body fat than I did 7 months ago. I am. I mean, and I see it, and I'm sure other people see it. And it's like, whatever. I think I look healthier. I think I look better, stronger. I've definitely gained muscle. That's sure.
That's without question, yeah.
I look at pictures of me before that, and for the first time, I say to myself, I look thin. And for the first time in my life, I don't like that.
Mm.
My whole life, I thought that's what I wanted to be. Thin, skinny, all those words. And I look at myself then and I would rather have a little more fat on me, you know? And that means
doing chin-ups with 25 pounds wrapped around your waist. And
I would much rather do that.
having more leeway with your nutrition, like being able to get to a point where it's like, listen, I think this is sort of the magic of it, right? Once you know what you need to do in order to, once the mystical wonder of fat loss is no longer a mystical wonder. Once you just know, all right, I know that I'm going to have to go into a deficit. I'm going to have to restrict my calories by this much, and it's not going to be fun. Once you know that and you've been there, it's no longer as enticing. It's like, all right, well, listen, I've been there. I've done that. I know for a fact I'm happier with 3 to 5% more body fat on my body because I can enjoy myself more. So I'm going to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at for sure. That's exactly where I'm at. And I guess the power of all of this is knowing, I mean, I'm maintaining this. Literally, I gained 6 pounds, I dropped ones, and I have been almost flatlined since. I am really 5 pounds up, and I know how to maintain that. I've learned how to maintain that. I'm good. So if I want to lose, I'll eat a little less.
That's it.
Pretty much it.
I love that. That's amazing. That's amazing, Susan. What's your plan for the rest of the day?
I am going to try and not do anything. We're going to see how that goes.
Are you watching anything on Netflix?
No. So I have on cue the show that you recommended to me.
Shooter, right?
And this is an interesting thing. I have a hard time stopping and watching something. I have to do something. I need to get over that. So this is like the, I don't know if this is a dumb goal or whatever, but I really want to be able to relax and do something. You know, when I'm here, when I'm somewhere else, I can do it.
Got it.
I have no problem. Like when I go to New York, I'm always having, it's at night, I'm in my room. I always have Netflix on or something.
Yeah.
It's not a problem there. Or when I'm away, but it's a problem here. And I think it's what we talked about is just that it's
always on.
On. So yeah, that's my goal, is to try to watch something like that.
Have you tried like setting an alarm for when everything must stop? Like, all right, by 8 p.m., everything must stop. And now like I can do no work, no emails, no social media, any of that.
I haven't set an alarm, but I have been trying to like go back to the bedroom, get in the shower by 9 something. That's always, mm-hmm. That's my goal every night. And at that point, yeah, it's from the shower, clean up, in bed, book, or have the TV on or something like that.
All right. So accountability time for so tonight. You got it. What time is it right now?
It is 6:22.
Okay. So by 7:30, you got to be done with all work, everything done. And you have to tell me tomorrow how you liked at least the first one, if not two episodes of Shooter.
Okay, I can't get through 2. I can tell. Right, I will be too tired. I will get sleepy. So I'll do one. I will do one, and I will tell you about it so you know I watched it.
There you go. Creating accountability.
Yeah.
The show is amazing. It's absolutely. Oh my God.
Have you started the second? The second.
I started the third season.
Oh my God. You binged.
Yeah, I binged it. I binge watched it with my girlfriend. Yeah. It's incredible. It's such a good show.
Wow. How many seasons are there?
Well, so here's the thing. When we first started it, there were only two listed on Netflix. So we were watching it. And all of a sudden we checked what episode we were on last night. And it said we were on season 3, episode 2. I was like, The season 3 must have just come out or something while we were watching it. So there's only 3 seasons. So we're probably going to be done with it by the end of this week.
Wow. That's amazing. So I got some catching up to do.
All right. So let me know tomorrow what episode 1 is like. And I'll talk to you then. Oh, Susan, tell everyone, where can everyone find you?
You name it. I'm probably there. Susan Niebergall Fitness everywhere. Like Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, everything.
Amazing. I love you, Susan.
I love you.
All right. Have a good night.
You too.
That wraps it up for this episode of the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. And don't forget, if you want to join Susan and I in the Inner Circle, you can do that at www.sfinnercircle.com. Have a wonderful day.